Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know, the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breeze.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and we got, I'll tell you, I had to search long and hard to find a friend of mine. He was a professional trader, went to a professional newsman for Bloomberg, and then came back and is now operating Bullseye Brief. That's bullseyebrief.com. My man, Adam Johnson. What's up, Adam Johnson?
Great to be with you, Todd. It's been a while since you and I were on Bloomberg doing our thing, but you know, it's fun being an entrepreneur and kind of getting back to my trading roots. So I'm having a ball with the newsletter.
Yeah, you were a great trader. I mean, you've got a great pedigree. You understood it, and you're really a guy that kind of gets the markets. You know, in the industry, there's not a lot of people really get the markets from the inside, and you understand markets. And you know, and before I get into anything else, I don't know if you remember this, because everybody thinks I'm always a bear. And I said, and I have a tape. I have a tape from 2014 when you were still at Bloomberg, I believe. And I said to you that you'd be irresponsible to be selling this market at that point in time. Do you recall that conversation?
Yeah, I vaguely do. I think it was probably on the afternoon show when Trish Regan, who's now over at Fox, she and I were doing the afternoon show. And I think you probably came on as our 4 p.m. New York time guess, right? Markets had just closed and everyone was trying to say, oh, this thing is over, it's done. And you obviously were very, prophetic in saying, no, you got to stay long this thing. If not, buy more, right?
That's what I thought. I mean, look, again, I think now I'm the opposite of that, but I know you've been bullish in here. But before we get started in the actual information, tell us about Bullseye Brief, what you do, because I know you got some great stuff. And the one thing I can say about your stuff and you is that it's always very professional and it's well done and it's well written.
Thank you.
It makes a lot of sense. No, listen, I read. What do you think? I read it, baby. You know, I don't read much, but I do read you. So tell us about Bullseye Brief. And if anybody, you know, when we're done, they can check you out. So give us the bio of Bullseye Brief.
Well, I tell people it's the three ideas most worthy of their time every 2 weeks. So I publish Bullseye every 2 weeks. And as I say, it's three ideas that are very specific, very thought out. I look for three things. I look for a great fundamental story. I look at compelling data that supports that story. And then I look for some sort of newsy hook. So if I were still on Bloomberg, I'd actually want to lead with this thing. That's what I look for. That's what I write up in Bullseye. And I'm happy to say that 34 active positions as of June 30th, and the average performance year to date for each write-up, 20.2%. So, you know, and the thing's working. And then on the off weeks, when I'm not publishing Bullseye, I put out a Sunday night roadmap for the week ahead, and I do my own podcast. You know, it's really the coming together of my two worlds. I traded for 20 years. I started at Merrill Lynch, then went to Louis Dreyfus, traded oil, went to a place called Furman Sells, which was awesome, traded stocks and stock options. We sold ourselves to ING at 7x book, which is shocking. And then my mentor, who was the CEO, we started a little hedge fund together, did that for 8 years. And by then it was, you know, 2008, I was going on CNBC and Fox. And Bloomberg said, hey, why don't you start putting your content on Bloomberg? And then ultimately they asked me to join them. So Bullseye Brief is really the just the summation of that entire career. 20 years analyzing markets and stocks, 6 years talking about markets and stocks, and now I do it for myself in Bullseye.
Yeah, I mean, you have a great opinion. I mean, you understand markets. So let's start with oil, since that's where that was your forte at one time. And of course, oil has been kind of wild, and it's gotten to a point. It popped up and got, you know, over 50, and now of course it's getting under a little pressure. What is your take on oil from your perspective?
Oil is a range trade. It's 42 to 55, and it's perfectly logical to understand oil in that context. Here's the deal. First of all, when you get oil down to about $42, you will literally shut in supply. all these shale producers that we read about, talk about, et cetera, that are now economic down into the 30s, at 42, it starts to become kind of marginal for them. So below 42, you will literally have production shut-ins, right? If you shut in production, you're cutting off supply. If you cut off supply, that tends to cause prices to rise. So you have a natural break on the downside at 42. Meanwhile, up at 55, those same producers will start hedging very aggressively. You know, if they can get oil up to 55, given that their cost basis is like 38, they're going to forward sell as much as they can. Well, as they forward sell into the futures market, you're increasing the supply, and obviously that tends to lower price. So there's a natural breaking action on both sides, 42 on the downside, 55 on the upside. You just trade the range, and you that applies, by the way, whether you're talking about oil, the commodity, or whether you're talking about the producers, E&P. So, for example, you pick some of the top producers, whether it's going to be Concho, EOG, Pioneer. When they trade to the top of the ranges, you sell calls. You know, struck out of the money by another, say, 10%, you're capturing some premium. Plus, you got a cushion. On the downside, you know, if they start to trade to the bottom of their ranges, you write puts. Again, we're just playing a range here. Use 42 to 55 on oil as your guide.
Wow. And do you use options in Bullseye Brief as well?
Oh, yeah, big time.
Okay.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did this very trade in Pioneer, which is the number one shale producer in the number one shale, which is the Eagle Ford down in Texas. Pioneer has some of the best real estate. Ticker, by the way, is PXD, Pioneer. And that's Papa X-Ray Delta for our military guys out there. So when oil got down to 42 and Pioneer, what was the handle? I was selling the, I'm just going to go to my Bloomberg right now and just type that puppy right in there. I sold the August 150 puts when Pioneer got down to about 150. I sold them at like six and a half. You know, they're now like two with Pioneer up at 162. And obviously, you know, a month of time premium has gone out. That's what I like to do. I hate buying premium. I'd love to sell it.
And that would be the correct way. I mean, writing options is always good. And so you use, now do you use much futures or you use strictly stocks?
No, you know, I never really traded futures. Even when I was trading oil, they had futures guys. So, you know, basically I was the young buck. I was like this 23-year-old kid trading the jet fuel position for Louis Dreyfus. At one point I was long 2.5 million barrels of jet fuel. And then the 1991 war broke out. You can imagine what happened to the jet fuel position. I was a hero that year. And they paid me a bonus of like 10 grand. I mean, the 23-year-old kid, like, oh, yeah, we'll pay him 10 grand. He'll feel like a hero, which I did, but whatever. Basically, the experienced traders all traded futures. The young guys who were learning how to trade traded the cash or the, you know, the actual commodity like me. I was trading, you know, barrels of jet fuel and heating oil moving around the country in pipelines or barges. And so I've never really traded futures. It's just not been my thing, even though I know that, you know, that's probably what most of your listeners will be trading.
Well, no, they trade options and stocks and everything else. But we're going to step out here for a break. We're going to be back with Adam Johnson from Bullseye Brief right after the break. And we're with Adam Johnson, of course, and I want to make sure you remember that his segment today is being brought to you by Audible Books. And to check out over 180,000 titles with a free download, you can go to audibletrial.com/The Bubba Show. Again, that's audibletrial.com/The Bubba Show. And you know I like the book Fed Up. That's from our friend Danielle DiMartino Booth, who's a regular here on The Bubba Show. So make sure you go check that out. In the meantime, don't forget to go down and download the show every single day at libertytalk.fm, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends with Xander. That's also at libertytalk.fm. And meanwhile, check out bullseyebrief.com. That's Adam Johnson, our guy. We're going to stop our break. We're going to come back with more from our man Adam Johnson right here on The Bubba Show. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bowers. We'll be right back at the break with more with Adam Johnson, The Bubba Show. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Adam Johnson from Bullseye Brief. Used to be with Bloomberg as a news guy, but an anchor, and worked with Trish Regan. Now you can catch him all the time on Fox Business as well, with Trish Regan as well as a commentator. But he's got a pretty solid opinion, and although we don't always agree, I do love what he has to say. And so, Adam, you know, we were talking about oil, and of course, you know, you were trading some people, you would call it the cash basis spread and all that stuff. You were trading the actual physical. But so we look into it, and now we've got a dollar, a U.S. dollar that has been trashed. But yet the dollar-denominated commodities have really not performed what you might have thought based on what the dollar is doing. Do you have any answer to that, or do you have a theory behind that?
I know. It's this weird disconnect where when, you know, the dollar gets trashed, commodities should rise, right? But, you know, because they have to maintain that purchasing power. But there's this disconnect as far as oil is concerned. Look, the world is awash in oil. We have more oil than we know to do it. It's why inventories are still at practically all-time record levels for, you know, this time of the year, right? Peak driving season, we got a ton of gasoline. That's just a function of supply. So take oil out of the equation. Then you say, well, what about, the ags, you know, wheat, corn, soy, et cetera? Well, thankfully, we have not had a drought. So we've got, you know, plenty of eggs on hand. As a result, we've got an ability to feed the U.S. herd of cattle. So beef prices are not running away. I mean, they're all very logical, fundamentally driven reasons why, thankfully, commodities are not expensive. The one thing about that, though, is that you do have this weird disconnect, as you point out, between dollar and commodity. They don't often go down together, but, you know, that's what we're seeing this year anyway.
No, I mean, it's like, you know, if I go back, you know, obviously the dollar is at about 16-month lows, and of course the euro currency is at three-year highs, but the dollar, more importantly, and gold, which everybody loves to run to on occasion, is actually 10% lower than it was the same point of the dollar last time. Gold is 10% lower than it was. To me, that's a concern for gold. It looks like it probably could go lower. You know, one thing about things that are weak, they typically stay weak until they aren't. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Well, yes, but I actually have an evolving opinion on gold. I've never liked gold because it doesn't pay a dividend. It doesn't pay interest. It sits there, arguably, you know, if you're going to hold bullion, it even costs money to own, right? I mean, there's an opportunity cost, there's a financing cost, et cetera. And yet, I have become a convert to gold. And I'll tell you why. The world is weird right now. And when the world gets weird, there's one place inevitably where people go. It has stood the test of time better than anything else. You go back thousands of years. And, you know, the VIX doesn't move anymore. I feel like the gold has become the substitute for the VIX. So if something crazy happens, gold will move. VIX, I don't know. I can't understand it, you know, the volatility there. But I actually like gold right now. And whether it's because there is some sort of brooding inflation that's out there, and by that I'm talking the wage price spiral. I'm not talking about commodities, because there's clearly no commodity inflation at the moment, nor do I think there'll be any. But if you get that wage price spiral to kick in, which, you know, we're starting to get sort of signals that that's happening in hourly wage growth, for example, in the ability of companies to raise prices. United Technologies and 3M have done that. You look at their recent earnings announcements. So if you have inflation, that's bullish for gold. If you have a sudden implosion of markets for some crazy reason we couldn't understand, whether it's Korea or whatever, that'd be bullish for gold. Given the weirdness in Washington, where logic doesn't seem to apply and no one can agree on anything, I think that's good for gold. So anyway, I've never been a gold guy, but I'm coming around to it. And I actually like the GDX, which is the junior miners ETF. That thing is poised. It's been consolidating for a long time. Meanwhile, the gold chart, you know, you have a series of higher lows, not to mention the fact that 1200 is held four times since January. So again, I've never liked gold, but there are just some reasons I'm getting to like it.
Oh, no, I can certainly understand that. I mean, listen, I just believe that, you know, everybody should have some small ownership. You know, it's like another asset class to have. But do you follow at all the Bitcoin or any of those cryptocurrencies? Is that in your wheelhouse at all?
It's really not. I'd be misleading you if I did.
No, I mean, look, I just think that some of the pressure is that, and I think the Fed itself, and, you know, I'm an anti-Fed guy. You know, I get worse every day because I continue to watch what they do. I don't think they do a very good job. Do you have an opinion on how the Fed, what the Fed is doing, or what the how they've done, in your opinion?
Yeah. Yeah, they waited too long. Now they got their backs against the wall, and they're still going slowly. I mean, I think it's crazy. I think that rates, I'm short the TLT, which is the bond ETF, and the Treasury bond ETF. I think rates are going to 3% in the next 6 to 12 months. And by the way, if you short the TLT, obviously you're making that bet. You can also write an out-of-money call, like going out to December, and the premium you collect will effectively fund the dividend that you are short by being short the TLT. So that's actually the trade I like on the TLT right now. Short TLT, short out-of-money call.
Really? Okay, so let me ask you a question. I'm sorry, go ahead. Finish. You go ahead.
No, it's, well, sorry, like, you wind me up and I just start talking.
That's good. I like that. Listen, you're my expert. So do you like the TLT better than the TBT, the inverse of the other side?
I get so confused with bonds, you know, because it's like, you know, price versus yield and up versus down and all that. I finally wrap my head around the TLT. So rather than introduce TBT, which now makes me think in reverse, I just keep it simple. Like, I get too confused.
Well, that's good. I mean, look, again, you understand what you want to do. And there's certainly, you can do either on either side. It's just sometimes the stock or the underlying is a little bit cheaper in the TBT because obviously the bonds are never going down again. And I want to ask you, you know, last week the Fed had their meeting and they came out with a very dovish statement, which is obviously one of the reasons we're seeing some of the action we're seeing. But at the same time, they said they're going to liquidate their bond portfolio potentially, which would not be dovish, that would be hawkish. So they kind of gave a backdoor possible rate hike because like all they have to do is if they want to liquidate, they can just start selling and that'll push the price up anyway. So what do you think of that? What was your thoughts of that whole meeting?
I think the Fed is a whole lot less dovish than people seem to think. And if you look at where the 10-year is trading, call it, you know, 226, 227, I think the market agrees because it hasn't budged. I mean, it's basically been 225 plus or minus a few ticks on either side for several weeks now. So for all this talk about how dovish the Fed is, why is the 10-year in the same place? Why is it 2%? And that's part of my argument. I think that there is just a budding realization that come September, the Fed's going to come back and say, hey, well, all you guys who are at the beach, here's what we noticed. And by the way, here's our plan to shrink the balance sheet. And by the way, yeah, we are planning to up rates again in December. And because we're data driven, it could happen sooner. And all of a sudden, everyone's going to go, whoa, I got to get back from the beach. What did I miss? That's my view on the Fed. Again, that's why I'm short the TLT. You know, they're going to start reducing this balance sheet. And, you know, think about the dislocation, the craziness that we've been living with, Todd, that's become normal of all this central bank buying around the world. I mean, it's like, you know, we've just come to think it's normal to operate this way. And I'm sorry, but it's not. To have a Fed, to have a Bank of England, a BOJ, Bank of Japan, and an ECB all buying to the tune of, you know, $4.5 trillion, you add all that up. And it's like the equivalent of U.S. GDP, which is, what, $19 trillion? I mean, this is a crazy world. And I think we're just deluding ourselves if we think that the Fed's going to stay put. I really do.
Well, I agree. And, of course, the currency war is a manipulation. But we're going to step out of our break. We'll be back with Adam Johnson from Bullseye Brief. And Adam is being brought to you in this segment by BarkBox.com. Of course, you guys know I love dogs, and you got to check it out. And, of course, at BarkBox.com, they send you a basket every month with or a package every month with the dog treats and toys. And of course they love the service of dogs. And of course the man's best friend, right? They don't ever have a bad day. They don't get pissed off at you. In the meantime, to get your BarkBox, you go to get 1 month free, go to getbarkbox.com/TheBubbaShow. Again, that's getbarkbox.com/TheBubbaShow to receive an extra free month of BarkBox. Again, I urge you to check them out. And, of course, don't forget to check out LibertyTalk.fm as we download the show every day for you. And, of course, there's also the Sporting Edge. And don't forget to check out Bullseye Brief. Adam does a great job. And, again, he's a trader turned turned anchor, turned back to writing about the markets. And I know it's his greatest passion, and I urge you to check out bullseyebrief.com. I think he does a great job. And of course, as you've heard, we have our ways that we both look at things, but make sure that you check him out as well as bubbatrading.com, which of course we have our hedging program up there. We've got our futures program and just general knowledge to help farmers, equity traders, everybody do a better job with their portfolio. We're going to step out here for a break. We'll be back with Adam Johnson from Bullseye Brief after the break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Adam Johnson from Bullseye Brief. Also used to be an anchor on Bloomberg. Does a lot of Fox business. Has a great opinion. And ex-trader, we love him. He's one of my friends. And you haven't seen him as much lately. I'm in New York. But in the meantime, Adam, so you got a great product going. And you and I have a little bit of similar thoughts on the Fed. And I want to get to your opinion. I know you love the market, but I'm going to make you wait for a little bit longer. But I want to understand, why is nobody talking about the amount of debt that the system is creating? I mean, eventually markets end when the debt just overtakes everything. And I don't know how we're going to ever satisfy or handle this debt between the Fed creating money and between the fractional banking, which creates money. I don't understand how we're going to ever satisfy the amount of debt that's in the system. Do you have an answer for me?
Yeah, because it's way too scary to talk about. That's why they're not talking about it. I mean, you know, people have got, we're like ostriches, you know. People are putting their heads in the sand because if you actually talked about it, look at Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. I mean, for crying out loud, Congress has just punted. Forget your view about, you know, whether you supported Obamacare or didn't support Obamacare, you know, whatever. Politics aside, just the fact that effectively Congress has punted on real reform that would actually balance Medicare and enable that thing to survive beyond the 8 or 9 years, which CBO says it has in its future, and then it runs out of money. No one has viable solutions. We just keep borrowing more money, and that's why nobody's talking about it. It's too painful. No one wants to address that. You know, it's like, I feel like we're going back to 2010. What was the expression, Todd? Extend and pretend, you know?
Well, is that what we're doing now? It's so, I say to you, Adam Johnson, and again, I'm gonna let you talk your bullish opinion, but I say to you right now that we've got more debt today than we had in 2008 in the housing bubble. And not only the debt today, at least the housing bubble, the banks at least had some hard assets. They weren't very good, but they were hard assets that they somehow could manage to figure out a way to hold on to if they needed to. Whereas just today's debt is either student debt, which is worth zero, and auto debt, which is a depreciating asset. So how do they solve? Eventually, it has to come. We have to have a come to Jesus meeting, right? I mean, eventually, it has to be solved. You can't keep going into debt because you're wiping out everybody, and you're not, by printing more money, you're just destructing buying power. And that's really how we're in the problem we're in right now, because we don't really have the buying power, and nobody can afford to hire anybody right now. What do you say?
Well, hang on. So there's a difference between the debt on the government's books versus the debt on corporations' books versus the debt on people's books. And the fact is, it's really only the government right now that is really strapped. Corporations are doing very well. Corporate balance sheets are very strong, stronger than they were in 2005. Meanwhile, personal leverage is down. I know that you've recently started to see charge-offs tick up to, I want to say, like 3.25% for personal credit cards. But if you look at, in aggregate, the balance sheet for individuals, you know, divided by the population, it's actually lower than it's been in decades. So I'm not as concerned about debt at the personal level or debt at the corporate level. I'm concerned about debt at the federal level. I guess we could say, well, the federal government can just keep, you know, printing money and funding it. And yes, that's true. I don't like it. But I'm not worried about corporations, Todd. I'm really not.
Well, corporations,
I mean, the two E's. My whole thing, and then I'll stop. So
that's okay.
Get in here. But my whole thing is the two E's, earnings and employment. That's what's driving stock prices right now. We have earnings growth in this country that's quite strong. We're seeing that again right now with the second quarter reporting season. It's averaging about 7%. And we have the most number of Americans working in decades. So the two E's, earnings and employment, that's what's driving stock prices. And that's why I'm okay paying what we're paying right now for stock prices. The debt thing is, in my mind, much more of a governmental concern.
Okay, let me throw some cold water on that for you, just so I can help you out. So I can help you out a little bit. Okay, so I agree. Corporate earnings are phenomenal. Look at a stock like Boeing. How many times do you see a company like Boeing go up 40% in 2 months and 15% in 2 days? It's a relative impossibility.
Oh, okay.
It should go in Ripley's, believe it or not, for a move that big in a company like that, right? It's not a tech company. I mean, it's not, you know. But anyways, it did. That's what it is. The tape is the tape. We can't fight it. But my point is very simple. Most companies are growing through contraction. They're not adding actually employees. And yes, we're in full employment, but the full employment is earning less than it was before, because full employment, all you have to do is look at the tax receipts. Tax receipts are significantly lower than they were a year ago and a year ago before that. So if we're not paying taxes, if there's no tax receipts, that means we're not earning as much.
Well,
I don't see that. Go ahead.
Hang on, though. Tax receipts are down in part because there's now this huge group of freelance employees. Well, they're not employees. They're freelance workers. And there's a whole change that's happening right now in terms of withholding, because companies are relying on temporary workers, seasonal workers, and freelance workers. There is no withholding in that scenario. So you would naturally expect tax receipts to be falling over time.
Well, I understand
that's a structural change.
I agreed, except that most people now, I know maybe New York is in great shape and maybe California is in great shape, but I know in the Midwest, people aren't working enough. They're not making enough money. They can't cover their bills, and they're struggling having to work two and three jobs. And I don't see that growing anytime soon. And I watch the corporate companies, the corporate balance sheets, and yes, they're great, except that they're not adding employees. They're not doing capital expenditures. They're actually cutting back on costs, which is great for the company, great for the CEO, great for the shareholders, but not so great for the American worker. What do you think?
Well, you know what's going on, Todd? It's technology. I mean, the fact is, for all of the the love that Silicon Valley gets, the fact is, and as you point out, you know, to the extent that technology improves productivity, you increase earnings gains, and that's good for investors. Absolutely. But the fact is, you know, if a company can go out and spend money on computers that are now doing the jobs, or robots doing the jobs that, you know, people used to do, then guess what? We are becoming more productive in a corporate sense, but it's also at the expense of employment, full-time employment. As I said, with a 4.3% unemployment rate, there are more Americans working than ever before. But as you point out, they're having to work multiple jobs. because, you know, you may not be needed 40 hours a week anymore. Technology has made you and the company more productive. So you split your 40 hours between two companies at 20 hours. You know, I'm making the numbers up.
But it's
the point.
And Obamacare keeps them from adding anybody on full time because I don't want to have to be responsible for the benefits. I mean, again, this is the old catch 22, right? It's what kind of goes on. And again, I'm not saying that it's going to have that much of an effect one way or the other. I mean, listen, the markets are the markets. The tape is the tape, and you can't necessarily get in the way of it. I mean, I don't like the market here. I think that, you know, I'm not telling you to sell it and short it. I'm just saying that, hey, to me, it's a little bit frothy in my eyes just based on all the things we talked about. But when we come back for the break, we're going to let Adam Johnson make his bull case, because I know he's bullish. I listen to him. I watch him. And, of course, we're going to make his case. And he's not wrong. Again, I don't want anybody to think that I think he's wrong. I mean, again, you know, and I've said this on numerous occasions, that the markets do go up 9% year over year. They just don't go up every year. And as an investor, I've never left the markets, okay? And I think that's important to understand, and that's what Adam's doing with his packages. He's teaching you how to become long-term investors. He's helping you build a long-term portfolio. And you can check him out at bullseyebrief.com. He gives you a lot of great service, and he's got, you know, some unique strategies and also a unique way of taking care of you, the clients. And I think that's it's a good fee to check out my guy's stuff, because he really does a great job. And again, it's about trying to find opportunities. So what we talk about almost every single day here is, how do you find the right opportunity to invest in the market? Because most of you will be investors. And, you know, so I talk, you know, during the shows, I talk about active trading and I talk about investing, but there's a difference, and you cannot confuse the two. And I think that's one of the things that Adam points out, is that, look, he's looking for some big ideas, and he gives you entries and exits. And again, you can check him out at bullseyebrief.com. It'd be a great checkout for you. In the meantime, we're with Adam Johnson from Bullseye Brief, also former anchor of Bloomberg, actually also former trader. Really got his stuff together. He got a big degree, and you know, he understands the markets. I think that's one of the things that we miss out with. You know, when you're watching, you know, on the airwaves, you miss out. Many of them don't have a good feel for what the markets actually mean. Adam does. But in the meantime, Adam is brought to you by Casper Mattress, and of course, Casper, they've got that, you know, new foam mattress that brings together and helps you get just a great night's sleep. And they're offering the Bubba Show listeners a $50 discount on a purchase of a mattress. And of course, it's CasperTrial.com/TheBubbaShow. Again, that's CasperTrial.com/TheBubbaShow. And again, they give you the free 100-night sleep trial as well. So certainly worth your while. And don't forget, LibertyTalk.fm, you can download the Bubba Show every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And of course, don't forget Bubba's Bottom Line, available to you at BubbaTrading.com. It's free. Just my way of having a little fun on a video, and let you guys watch me check my blood pressure as I get into the things I like to really bitch about. In the meantime, we're going to come back with more from Adam Johnson from Bullseye Brief after the break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz will be right back with more after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with Adam Johnson of BullseyeBrief.com. You got to check out his site. Pretty good looking guy too, but I mean, he gives you trades twice a month, or the brief twice or three times a month. He's got Bullseye View, Week Ahead Preview, Podcast, and you can call him yourself. So there you go. What's going to be wrong with that? Adam, all right, so I know I've watched you obviously on Trisha's show, I see on Fox, and of course, I know you have a bullish tenure, and you said earnings and employment, and again, okay. So what kind of things are you looking for, and where do you think the next growth is coming from, and what would you be looking at some of things right now?
Well, I can tell you right now, just the quick answer, what do I think the growth is? Electric vehicles are huge. I love that theme, and there's so many ways to play it. From the spinoff that's happening at Delphi right now, where they're separating the legacy powertrains business from the electronics business, from NXP Semiconductors, NXPI is the ticker, which is being bought by Qualcomm. And I really hope that doesn't go through so I can go back out and buy NXPI again, because, you know, in an electric vehicle, there are 28 sensors, and that's not even the next gen. That's just the ones right now that are the hybrids. And so you need a semiconductor company that can produce all that stuff. You look at the opportunities right now among lithium miners, and I'm not talking about the big ones like SQM out of Argentina or even Albemarle. I'm talking about my little lithium basket of Canadian miners. You know, they're trading at 50 cents, and you buy three of them. You take 2% of your capital, and you go buy three of them, so that you're spreading the wealth around. You know, we're talking about playing for a 10-bagger here on lithium. You know, Todd, a typical electric car has 200 pounds of lithium, all right? Guess what? For a bus, it's like 6,000 pounds. So we're talking about exponential growth, especially as governments mandate not just clean cars, but buses, you know, public transportation. So that's a huge theme, just electric vehicles right there. Remember, my objective is to find long runway opportunities for my subscribers to make money. Occasionally, I'll do something, you know, just for the trade for a few months, but I'm really trying to find opportunities. Thematically, I'm putting out three ideas every 2 weeks, and I'm very specific. Buy here, stop loss there, target here. I keep people updated. If there are opportunities to trade options around these core positions, I do that. But I'm looking for specific opportunities. They're catalyst driven. I'm not trying to call the market. So there are just so many special sits, you know, special situations that excite me. I mean, I should just stop because I will keep going.
No, you're good. I mean, look, I have a lot of respect. You know, again, you have a very solid opinion. You've always had. I mean, even when you were on Bloomberg, you know, you gave a solid opinion. It wasn't, you know, the old standard, you know, rah, rah, rah. It was, this looks good here because of this, and this doesn't look good here because of this. And I think, so where do you see, what's your, I'm going to put you in the telling the future right now. Where's the Dow 6 months from now?
I just told you I don't call the market.
No, I know you don't. I'm just, in your opinion, I understand.
And now you're like, okay, all right. My objective is not to call the market, but since you're asking my opinion, I'm going to tell you I think it's higher.
Yeah, okay. No,
that goes back to, in fact, arguably, just to make it easy, I'll give you Dow 23,000, right, up 1,000 points from here. For the simple reason, well, there are two reasons why. The two E's
earnings
reason,
and employment.
All right, earnings. What, you there?
Earnings and employment, baby.
You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounded like we cut off. All right, so I'll give you two reasons. Number one, the two E's, earnings growth and employment. And number two, tax cuts. The real meat and potatoes of this market right now is the two E's. Earnings growth of 8%, although I think it'll be 10%, you know, for the full year. And full employment in this country at 4.2%, the most number of Americans working in many decades. So as people make money, they spend money, that goes into corporate coffers, it generates earnings growth. Again, the two E's, that's a very powerful concept. You add to that the fact that we will get tax reform. We didn't get health care, but we will get tax reform, because if they don't cut taxes, they're out of a job. You know, there's midterm elections coming in 18 months. If these guys don't get tax cuts done, then they're going to be voted out. So I'm pretty sure we're going to get tax cuts, and I can get more into that and dig down deeper if you like. But I think the tax cuts will add an additional 5 to 7 percentage points onto both return and, more importantly, to earnings gains. So that you know, 7% earnings gain, maybe 10%, you know, if we're lucky for year end on earnings, will actually get up to like 15% once you figure in tax cuts. So the two E's, earnings and employment plus tax cuts, that's how we get to 23,000.
Okay, so your objective, Adam Johnson from Bullseye Brief, is to help people build a portfolio, picking individual stocks and using some strategies around them to help create yield or help finance or whatever you're going to do, but you really don't care directly about the overall market. You care about the, obviously, earnings and employment, but the Bullseye Brief is about finding the right play at the right time, and you'll have probably some conservative stuff, and there's probably some stuff that maybe is a little bit maybe more out there. You know, you mentioned some of the Canadian stuff, you know, that may be 50 cents or whatever. But again, that's kind of your that's the Bullseye Brief model, is to help people build a long-term portfolio. Would that be a good assumption?
Yes. Special situations. Look at Hain Celestial, the guys who are number one in the organic food business, right? They produce more organic stuff, including, you know, their Celestial Seasons teas. That's the one everyone knows. But even Terra chips. So, you know, they had to restate their financials. Stock went from 55 to 35. Hovered at 35. It's now at 44. Well, Irwin Simon is long the founder, a staggering amount of stock. He's getting ready to retire. And you know what? The stock is cheap now because of the financial restatements, which they did, and now it's behind them. And you start looking at some of the other food transactions that have occurred. You just apply those same multiples. You can get up to $55 or $60 for Hain. All right, so that's $15 or $20 north of here. By the way, I should note that Whole Foods is Hain's number one distributor. And Whole Foods is now going to be selling through Amazon, so that's very good for Hain. So that's an example of a special sit, an opportunity to make some money that has nothing to do with the market. On the short side, I look at Callaway Golf, where we are losing hundreds of golf courses per year in this country. The demographics for golf are terrible, and the earnings are down for Callaway Golf. I'm sure Callaway Golf, again, has absolutely nothing to do with the markets. I look at iRhythm. IRTC is the ticker there. This is the company that makes the Zio patch. It is 50% more effective than the traditional Holter monitor at detecting heart arrhythmia. And they just got an indication, not just for detecting arrhythmia, but you start wearing the patch now for permanent or full-time heart monitoring. So anyone who has any kind of heart issue can now wear the Zio patch from iRhythm. You know, again, nothing to do with the market. Very exciting. These are solid fundamental stories. I like the fact that when you look at Macy's, another special situation, enterprise value of the company right now is $12.9 billion, but the real estate on the portfolio is $12.1 billion. Well, think about that for a moment. They're effectively saying that you're buying the entire company for a very small premium to the real estate. That's like getting the retail business for free. And by the way, if you actually look at the comp for the Saks Fifth Avenue store, which was refinanced on Fifth Avenue at $2.7 billion, and the Macy's Herald Square, which is three times the size of that Saks flagship, so you mark that, let's say, at $6.5-$7 billion. So then you're saying, well, the other several hundred locations for Macy's are only worth like another few billion? Way too cheap. So these are all special situations.
That's my guy.
That
special,
very exciting to me.
A special Adam Johnson from Bullseye Brief. It's always great to hear from you. I'm glad we finally got you on. I hope you'll come back and join us again.
Oh, please, Todd. Love being on. I'm sorry I ramble, but I just get so excited. There's so many opportunities. I love talking about them. So please, thanks for having me, and please have me back if you guys want to hear from me again.
You got a free pass, my brother. Thanks. I appreciate it. And that was our guy, Adam Johnson from BullseyeBrief.com. What a great guy. And, of course, him and I are friends back in, when he was with Bloomberg. But it was great to have him on. And make sure you check out his website, BullseyeBrief.com. Really got a solid opinion. Anyways, that'll do it for today. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz, thank you so much for being a part of the show. And we had a great time with Adam. And we'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.